Hello, grandkids, and welcome to Stunt Granny Audio number 469. This is Kevin DeFranco. On the other end is Chris Calamita. What is up, good sir?
Not a heck of a lot there, Kevin. Kevin, how about yourself?
Well, things are finally starting to slow down in the new Stunt Granny Studios, which is pretty nice. There is still some work to be done to get completely organized, but the we are mostly there, so I am appreciative of that. It has led to a full week of wrestling viewing that seems somewhat normal. Although the wife still having to fit in her soap operas prior to me watching professional wrestling is something that I'm not always used to these days. So I'm caught up on all kinds of soap operas. General Hospital and Days of Our Lives, I'm ready to go if we really need to expand for time in this show, but I hopefully that is not necessary.
I am way behind on that. I'm about 20, 30 years behind on that, so you really have to catch me up.
Yeah,
but I think that with SummerSlam upon us, we should have enough wrestling talk to get us through an hour here.
I mentioned it right before we started. I just put SummerSlam preview in for the show title because really, like, there wasn't a whole lot this week that changed the dynamic of the match that was involved. I would have to say, I may have been in the camp of, why don't they just say that it's going to be Dean Ambrose? I think we have an answer as to why they didn't introduce Dean Ambrose until the last minute. Because that guy is looking like he's stacked on about 20 pounds of muscle during rehab.
Oh, he's jacked right now. Oh, absolutely. No, that was all very, it was very well done the way they did it. The announcement, the introduction of, reintroduction of Dean Ambrose, it was going to get a huge pop, you know, no matter where they were. And, you know, so it was pretty much a guaranteed. And he got a great reaction and definitely looks different. It's the biggest I've ever seen him. A new haircut is always welcome in these situations. As they say, absence makes the heart go fonder. I think that, you know what? Maybe Dean Ambrose can really start to live up to what a lot of people thought he was, a few years ago. If Fantasy's coming back, They cut out the comedy. He's just, this intense guy, this lunatic, looking to hurt people. I think that they got something.
They were getting too cute with his character, and though he can do that stuff, that's one of those ones where, when they were like, make sure you do it up to the best that you can do it. Dean Ambrose was doing the comedy stuff at least somewhat well, but it just made his character, it made it hard to take his character seriously. And they can use a fresh face in the main event scene. They could just use, 9 months off that's an awful long time for any injury, in this day and age.
It is. So he's been gone a long time. Once again, the fans definitely missed him and gave him a hero's welcome on the way back. Doesn't mean that they can't turn him heel eventually, because I do think that if Dean Ambrose is going to adopt a harder edge, and really, be a psychopath, a heel run could definitely benefit him, especially since that heel side is so weak. Oh, what do you even do with a babyface champion? Who's around every? Who's around? Who defends the title on every show? Are we gonna
what? You think that they're Drew McIntyre on that list? Just by default, Dolph Ziggler by default.
I guess he is. I mean, but then you got Constable Corbin and Kevin Owens.
Kevin Owens is,
but
yeah,
playing the coward for the last few months, so that can be a bit of a struggle.
Someone laid out the him winning the briefcase and cashing in at that point, which would it would work theoretically. I don't know if they're going there necessarily. I don't think so, but it could happen.
I mean, it's a possibility. It's wide open there. But no, I mean, reintroducing Ambrose with to be in Rollins' corner. I mean, you shouldn't go with anything like a heel turn right away, I don't think.
Oh.
So let them team up again. You know, let the Shield do their thing. We'll get into that. We'll get into the Roman Reigns and stuff later. Let them do their Shield thing. The match on Sundays now, it does. It does have a different dynamic now with Ambrose at ringside, and of course that means there's going to be a lot of outside activity during the match. Rollins right. and Ziggler, they can have a really good match. Hopefully, it's not 30. It's not 30 minutes this time, and I don't think it will be.
No, I would imagine this one's going to be a little bit shorter than that. Shorter. I would not be surprised if it goes 20 minutes or something like that.
No, I can see if it will be even one of the longer matches on the show. I could. But, it won't go as long as their match at Extreme Rules did. So, I think if they have a shorter, tighter match, hit the high spots, involve Dean and Drew, I think that they'll have a match that's much better received than the one they had at Extreme Rules. And I also think that I don't think that, Dean Ambrose is going to come back in a failing effort. So I imagine that there will be a new Intercontinental Champion after SummerSlam.
Yeah, there are a lot of situations where I'm like, they can't have that guy lose, right? Like, I feel like there are a lot of those matches at this SummerSlam. Because it would seem weird. Anyone coming back from injury, especially a layoff that long, they always seem to be involved in the better side of things in their first feud back. Can't seem to find a scenario on how exactly Roman Reigns bounces back if he loses to Brock Lesnar again.
I don't. Then again, I felt that after WrestleMania. I felt that after Raiders for Royal Rumble. But here we are. And again, but no, this time, everything they've done to set this up, I think that Roman Reigns needs to win. How did you feel about what they did last night, Kevin? As far as seemingly ending the whole mystery about whose side Paul Heyman is going to be on a week early.
Roman Reigns wasn't really buying what Paul Heyman said. The piece of paper was the only... Heyman learning some Samoan, and that piece of paper seemed to be the only things that gave Reigns, any pause at all. So, I mean, I guess I don't think I would have thought that Heyman was ever going to be on Reigns' side, despite the way that he was talking. And I guess I'm fine. I guess they just decided to go that direction. Like, it's one of those things where it doesn't bother me one way or the other. Like, I guess maybe that's not the way that I would have pulled it off. Just because even going into Sunday, like, that tease from last week about knowing the trick to beating Brock Lesnar almost felt like it needed teased longer, I guess, is the only thing that I would have liked to have seen. But they were out of time. You know, like, they would have needed to set everything in motion, like, a week earlier to kind of tease that out a little bit more, which I think would have been decent enough fodder for a week's show. But they didn't, and it, you know, it kind of was what it was. Like I said, I never would have brought Heyman as Roman Reigns' advocate from the jump. Like,
I see what you're saying.
You know, you're talking about Ambrose turning at some point. Like, I guess I don't see Heyman turning in that fashion.
That's interesting way to put it. But I do. Now, what they did was shocking. Ball did have me. They don't do things like mace very often or pepper spray very often. So, I mean, I thought that they were just going to leave it at, Reigns and kind of stunned silence and Paul walking away and some, ambiguity going into, and some mystique going into Sunday. But then Paul pulled the pepper spray out of his coat, sprayed Roman Reigns into the eyes, and out comes Brock, and Brock and Heyman are back together, and Brock beats the hell out of Roman Reigns. Just because Paul was on Brock's side last night doesn't mean that they can't do the double swerve on Sunday either.
Right.
So once again, so maybe there's a little different twist on him, however this is all going to end. But Roman Reigns has to come out on top. he really does here, and no, he can't just come out on top only to be cashed in on for Money in the Bank immediately afterward. He needs to come out on top here and have a reign. We mentioned the issue with him having opponents, which is why him turning heel at this point is it could be enticing, because there's a lot of opponents on the babyface side worthwhile: Rollins, Ambrose, Balor, Strowman. Yeah, as compared to the heel side.
Right.
But I think Roman Reigns has to win this match, and as I said, I don't think he needs to be cashed in on either. I think that no matter what he comes out, what side he comes out on, he needs to win here and go on a run. Otherwise, the hell are we doing? What the hell are they doing?
Yeah, I mean, this is his third big high-profile chance. Like, you really can at least explain away the first one. Because of Rollins' interference. And you can explain away the second loss, or the third loss. So it's kind of, I don't even know how to term it, honestly. Like, Reigns is hated so much, he's got to kind of defend what is basically a 1-1-1 record against Brock Lesnar. You know, and it's one of those things that you needed this level of chicanery to get more people to boo Brock Lesnar than Roman Reigns, which they really kind of went for the gusto, in my opinion, with this angle, just with the whole way they presented it. Heyman with no shaving and really kind of giving Renee Young something to think about. Even without the extra added bit that they came up with later in the week.
Right.
It was still obviously a very compelling and very devious effort. And it's just kind of like, well, come on. Like, they're really making this guy the heel here, guys. Like, work with them a little bit.
And that's kind of the thing is that last night, it feels like what they did last night kind of erased what they had been doing, they had done the previous 2 weeks prematurely. Because Brock was getting booed.
Oh.
Very much, I think, based on the way he was treating Paul Heyman.
Oh, yeah.
And now Brock, now Paul is going to be back. He's going to be doing his usual Brock Lesnar announcement, reigning, defending, Universal Champion, all that. I think they did lose something. I do. Now, if it's, once again, it's part of the larger story, fine. I still don't think we're going to New York with any kind of a positive reaction for Roman Reigns. They've got to have a just dynamic. We didn't mention this last. They got to have a dynamic. It doesn't need to be long. Brock should not be just be kind of, you know, lazily throwing his suplexes or throwing his weight around. They can have a 5-10 minute match that is all action. And I think that's what this match and what the story they've been telling.
Yeah, I guess it'll be interesting to see. There are a lot of angles that they can go with in this match that could fit an interesting narrative. So it'll be interesting to see it unfold, honestly. Like, that's one of those ones where, yeah, how Reigns gets there, I'm not sure that I care. But they do have definitely have some options out there. And I mean, heck, even a S.H.I.E.L.D. reunion to kind of help things out, that always seems to get Roman Reigns cheered. So if Rollins and Ambrose somehow make their presence felt, I'm sure there would be some extra people on Reigns' side.
Yeah, they could certainly do something like that, yeah. Basically, I think you really need to just make this so that you don't give the crowd a chance to get bored. You go give them a chance to start trying to play their little, sing their little chants or any of that BS.
Right.
You know, don't be boring. Anyway, be boring. Brock needs to come in there. He needs to be the beast. He needs to be, you know, kind of come up reckless of going with reckless abandon. And Roman Reigns needs to respond in kind. That's how you get through this without it turning into WrestleMania.
Yeah. So that one will be an interesting one. I guess the other the other Raw Championship match is one that sticks out in my mind. One Ronda Rousey is taking on Alexa Bliss.
And I think if Alexa Bliss was paying attention, we found Ronda Rousey's weakness. Bats.
Well, maybe she'll come out in a bat costume to overcome this fear, and we'll have the Ronda Rousey layer.
Oh my God. Oh, that!
And I can't wait until she has.
I did not notice it the first time I watched it. Of course, the good old internet had. Good old Twitter had to put that in my point of view.
Well,
no, that was quite hilarious.
It was one of those things where I know that I was sitting there thinking to myself, watching that, I'm like, man, Ronda Rousey has a weird look on her face because I know the cameras went to her when that was going on, and I was just like, something isn't right, but I wasn't paying attention. I wasn't reading her lips, I don't think. So I didn't notice her mouth. It's a bat. the level of concern on her face was just outstanding. And I dare say it's somewhat appropriate. Most people are not used to dealing with bats. I have dealt with bats more times than I'd care to mention, including one meeting my windshield, which was rather gross. I don't think Alexa Bliss is really the woman to be releasing a what's a large congregation of bats? Is it a colony? I don't know. I'm trying to think of what that would be, but it's not coming off the top of my head. So,
A colony or a cloud of bats.
Ah, wow, okay. Got it right.
I think that if Alexa gets in trouble, it's time for Alicia Fox to unleash the bats. Or shine the bat signal or something.
Yeah, Foxy seems like she's crazy enough to be the one to pull that off. Because Mickey James is not going to pull that off. That to me was one of the more amusing things about Ronda Rousey having a new friend in Ember Moon. When Alexa Bliss herself has her own new friend in Alicia Fox, who she hadn't been with.
They did what they had to do in Natalia's absence. Interesting that they had Ember Moon get so much offense in, and then basically have Alexa Bliss beaten before the Alicia Fox interference led to this qualification. But no, the story was about Ronda, and I liked how they had her take out the entire security force just as soon as they had shown up. And they've done a good job with this. They've done nothing really to make you think that in any way, shape, or form that Alexa Bliss has a chance in hell here. Which makes you wonder. She will escape.
Yeah, this is the one situation where I'm like, man, they really just need to have Rousey just win this one, right? Like, I mean, Alexa Bliss has really been painted like a chump. Because, I mean, it is really weird where I think in some ways you can compare Bliss and Carmella, but I guess I always defend Bliss's in-ring acumen more than Carmella's. But she definitely has a bigger personality than pretty much the rest of the women's division.
Yeah, she really does. I mean, her personality, carries her through. Her charisma, she's a great heel. I think Sunday's the time for her to get her comeuppance. I think that, even if she doesn't lose via pinfall, having Rousey fail again, just not win again, I think it's a mistake if they go that route to try to drag this out more.
Right.
I think that Rousey should be the Rousey should be the defending champion, the dominant champion going forward here. I think what they did with Ed Money in the Bank with Alexa Bliss cashing in on Nia Jax after attacking Ronda with a briefcase, that was really well done. That was a great kind of shock moment. And they've been able to, with help of a 37 day suspension, and Ronda Rousey having an amazing all access pass that's just allowed her to jump into the action at Extreme Rules. I wonder where you buy those tickets. They've been able to even drag this out for another 2 months, and the chase, I think you can run interference from Alicia Fox, you can run interference from Mickie James, although it's another match that's going to be based through a lot around interference when we basically got the Intercontinental title match being all about the outside activities. But, I mean, once again, but you know, you really can't do a straight Rousey Bliss match believably. So you do have to have a lot of Gaga in there.
Right.
But I think that in the end, Rousey should make Alexa Bliss tap out the armbar. And as we've seen before, Alexa Bliss has a little trick that she can use to really make that look especially brutal.
Yeah, they haven't pulled it out in a while. I will not be surprised if they pull it out this time. And I would not be surprised if she uses it, you know, to get out of an armbar early in the match, and then, you know, she really clamps one in later, for the true victory. Although really, if your arm bends that way, like, can you go even further?
I don't know. That's a really good question. Maybe it's what the question we'll have answered on Sunday.
I just, like, man. Yeah, I'm just thinking gross things right now.
Yeah, okay.
And I really don't need to be doing that.
No, yeah.
But, yeah, I guess on the Raw side of things, then, if we're doing, you know, more of a SummerSlammy pay-per-view, you did mention him on the list of heels. We have Constable Corbin and Finn Balor. I can't imagine that this is going to be a whole lot on the show.
No, it really can't. There's 10 matches on this show. They, you know, I am liking Corbin a little better with the new look and whatnot, but in the ring, it still gets a little rough. He still relies on a lot of rust holes, you know, a lot of bear ups, a lot of chin locks.
That was one of those things where I guess I didn't. I meant to look at my last two columns, or well, maybe I needed to look at some tweets, but. Didn't Tyler Breeze wrestle Mojo Rawley a couple of times recently?
He may very well have.
Because I felt like he was a... That Tyler Breeze was a bump machine for someone. And I thought it was him. I could be wrong, but I guess I was expecting him to do as well with Baron Corbin this week. Because I really did like Corbin's match. The other, I'm trying to think of who he had the really good match with, even though it was too long, last week.
Reigns?
Oh, yeah, Reigns. You know, I really enjoyed that match, but there seems to be, like, this inconsistency with Corbin's in-ring work that somehow needs to be straightened out.
Yeah, there definitely is. And I don't know if this SummerSlam's the place to do it. There's a lot of matches. It's going to be a long show. This is one of those matches that feels excessive. Feels like I know they want Finn on the show and they're pushing Corbin right now, but it feels like a match that's going to be just complete filler that doesn't need to really be there. Hey. I know at Extreme Rules, Finn won on something of a fluke roll up, so he did not hit the coup de grace to finish off Corbin. So I imagine that's what we'll see this time, unless they are going to go with Corbin as a top contender for the Universal Championship that would be held by a babyface Roman Reigns. God help us.
yeah, that might break the internet if Finn Balor loses that one. Or at least wrestling Twitter will go crazy. What's the tag title match?
Tag title match is on the kickoff with Revival and the B Team.
Ah, yes.
So I very well, I will very likely miss that one.
Yeah, it will depend. That will be one where it will be on, but if I need to be doing other things, that is what will be occurring at like 5 Eastern when this match is on. But, you know, yeah, it is what it is. Like, I kind of, the B Team is enjoyable for what they are. The Revival still needs some help. I don't know if them winning the titles from the B Team is the right way to go about the help. You know, I always feel like you need some type of build up to get to those world titles. And they've been showing them complaining for a couple of weeks, but they haven't shown them whooping anyone for the most part. Which is what really is what is needed.
Right, no. I mean, to do a title change, in the first hour of the kickoff, when in front of, when maybe half the crowd isn't even to their seats yet, that's just that's just almost insulting at that point. And people have felt insulted by being put in that position. Really long pre-show, these 2-hour pre-shows before the big events, lead to, them starting the show in the 5 o'clock hour, Eastern time. Well, that's it. They're New York, so obviously, of course, they're Eastern.
Yeah.
I had to think about it for a second, but yeah, no. And, it's just, nothing on the kickoff I really feel like is going to be saying anything I need to see. I feel a little bad for the cruiserweights, but not bad enough that I'm going to, break land speed records to get to the destination of my SummerSlam gathering.
Yeah, that early. And, hey guys, let's get this on. I feel bad. I know people are still talking up 205 Live, and it seems like a show that I could enjoy, but there's still just so much wrestling on, and I can't just only watch the WWE. So 205 Live is still definitely a show that suffers from my viewing. I mean, I'm even still trying to play catch up on NXT. I think I still have a couple of weeks to go here. Well, and this week would be a third week.
I catch up to Brooklyn. Well, you better get working on that, because TakeOver's on Saturday.
Yeah, I have been working on it. Just because I don't really have much recorded on the DVR. So it's kind of made it pretty easy. And I think I should be able to catch up by Sunday.
Saturday.
Or Saturday. Of course, I almost never watch it Saturday either, though, because 9 times out of 10, I have something on the docket for a Saturday evening. Like, if I had tickets to that, yes, I would obviously go. And I have several different times on Saturday nights. But in this case, I don't. So that's the great thing about the network. I can, I still get the alerts, so I'll end up seeing the results. But I'll still end up going through and watching it, because results are one thing. Watching the action for that show is a whole different thing, in my opinion. And it's always worth tuning in. So hopefully I can get that in maybe Sunday morning or Sunday afternoon. I guess we weren't going to preview them, but we were going to move on to SmackDown, I suppose. just because, I mean, Raw really did not have a lot going for it. SmackDown, I mean, at least they had Dean Ambrose come back and they had the Lesnar beatdown, so you had a rare Lesnar appearance. SmackDown really did not have anything, pretty much at all.
No, SmackDown didn't really have anything. You know, didn't have a lot of big stars in the ring. Didn't have a lot of, you know, definitely a lack of interaction. Not a bad show. Once again,
I wouldn't call it a lack of in-ring action. It was just that, like, everything was pretty much a squash match.
Yeah, that is true. Although the women's tag, I think that went longer than it needed to.
Oh, right.
You know, especially for the level that Mandy Rose and Sonya Deville are at, I think that it went a little long, especially when the whole story is the babyface team that's going to be facing each other on Sunday. You know what? Now that we've seen all the build-up, I really wish they had to put Charlotte in the damn match. This really should be Becky's moment. I know what they're trying to do, but it's just not landing with me. It really does feel like, you know, Charlotte's being, especially since they did not, as I thought they were going to, when they first added Charlotte to the match, that Asuka was going to be adding the match to make it a four-way. I mean, that would have made more sense.
Right.
But now it really does feel like Charlotte is being shoehorned into a match she doesn't need to be part of. Since they're already letting Asuka sit on the sidelines for one pay-per-view, so you might as well let Charlotte sit on the sidelines too, and let Becky have her now for herself.
Yeah, well, Asuka can sit on the sidelines because of reasons that I will not accuse of the WWE of, Charlotte was off TV for all of that time. And to just have her jump in, it's just bad timing for Becky. Like, even if they have done a good job of defining their rivalry with each other, I think. And I think that they could pull off a full-fledged feud and keep both of them babyface if that's the route they'd want to go.
Can. I hope they don't think that they can turn Becky Lynch heel in this scenario, because I don't think that would work out. I think that they would be have complete misunderstanding of human psychology if they think that they can turn Becky Lynch heel of the two. I mean, if you just have Becky go out there and have rumblings about how Charlotte, it's always about Charlotte. Most of the crowd is gonna be like, you know what? She's right.
Yeah, that would be, because Corey Graves certainly does not harp on Charlotte the way he does Sasha Banks, but he really could pretty much pull off the same shtick with her.
Yeah,
if he wanted
to.
And
you don't want to be doing the same shtick on both shows, so.
Oh, right.
I hope they don't do the whole long dragging out of a Becky Charlotte split if that's where they're headed. As far as Sunday is concerned, you know what? I guess I get it. Adding Charlotte to the match makes it a better match because you do have, you know, the physical interactions between Becky and Charlotte to look forward to, as opposed to just Carmella, who of course is you know, on the low end of the work rate scale.
Yeah, that was one of the more rough lines to me of the week, when Charlotte called Carmella a diva. I was like, ooh, man, that's one way to go.
That is, I mean, because it is very true. And the one girl you know, who is the one woman, I should say, who is, you know, still holding on to the diva era. She can get heat, and that is kind of the heat that Carmella gets, and she's been. You know, there's a strong argument that her title reign should not have been this long.
Oh,
and
right.
She should not have beaten Asuka twice. They've got a lot of work to do. They got a lot of work to do with Asuka following SummerSlam for sure. But
yeah.
I'm still pulling for Becky. I think that they should still have, you know, Becky come out of this the winner.
Yeah, and I guess that's the weird thing about the situation too with Charlotte being in there. Again, if you have that be the first feud, I think you can define that. You know, everyone's kind of overlooking Carmella, which is fine, but you know, it makes more sense to have Becky pin her. Obviously, or whomever ends up winning, I guess. I would think that Charlotte and or Becky would get that pinfall on Carmella and not the other person to extend the feud.
Right. No, I think that if Carmella's losing the title, I agree with you, she should definitely, and she will probably take the fall. If there's going to be a heel turn in the Charlotte-Becky story, it really should be Charlotte. I think that a Charlotte heel turn is the way to go there. So, if that's where they're going. As I said, it's one of those weird things that it feels like something was added to this match that didn't need to be. And then, in the U.S. title match, something you expected to be added has not been. They're really going to keep Randy Orton out of the match.
And it's really strange, too, because they've definitely kept him lurking around the match.
They really literally
tonight, he was lurking. It's really strange because, I mean, his name has been on the announcers' tongues the last couple of weeks. And, yeah, like, the fact that he wasn't added to the match is just one of the weirder things that WWE's done recently.
Yeah, it's the whole thing has been about him, and it looks like they really are going to kind of hold off on doing anything with Hardy and Orton until Hell in a Cell next month, which, if you do that match between them and put it in the cell, it could be something special. I know Crazy Jeff Hardy has never done a Hell in a Cell match and desperately wants to do one because apparently he wants to kill himself in front of the world. So I mean, I guess you can do that, but it just feels like this weird match that, you know, one guy has essentially been for the most part feuding with someone else. And
right.
He's not been really focused on. They tried to do a little bit tonight with the four with Hardy and Nakamura, which is fine. But it was fine what they did. But yeah, you're gonna have this match where you're just waiting for Randy Orton to interfere, and it just doesn't. Once again, another match fifth round.
Yeah,
you know, outside interference is essentially.
Well, and Jeff Hardy hasn't even had the chance to say that he's concerned about Randy Orton interfering in this match. I mean, it is for a championship.
Yeah, no. They're doing nothing to keep Randy Orton out of this. You know, they're not having Paige ban him from ringside, ban him from the arena, ban him from the state. They're not putting him in a cage or anything. They're not, you know, Jeff Hardy's not getting anybody to watch his back. So he's not as smart as Seth Rollins.
Yeah, there's a lot of weird stuff going on with this
feels like we're gonna,
match.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of weirdly done. Just like we're waiting. Once again, they're going to have you know, I'm sure a good little match, but I guess the finish of Orton possibly part of the match and Nakamura retaining really is not. It's kind of a foregone conclusion. It feels like.
I would expect so, and even if Orton doesn't interfere outright, I would think that he's going to play a factor in the finish one way or the other.
Right.
And I guess we haven't addressed the SmackDown side. Their main championship, the WWE Championship match, which certainly ended on something of a personal level.
Yeah, it was a very... They're trying, once again, they had with about, you know, the last few weeks, they've been trying to push this personal, you know, this personal angle with the match. I don't know how deep it's landing, because once again, what do you do with all of this? I mean, Samoa Joe reading a letter from who was supposedly AJ Styles' wife, like, What is Styles supposed to do with that? Is he supposed to in any way believe it?
Oh, right.
Is he really gonna, you know, make that fatal mistake on Sunday that will give Joe the win? How is AJ Styles supposed to defend himself against the accusations of Samoa Joe? Are we supposed to see AJ Styles taking his kids to Little League and going to church, or, you know, or what have you?
Yeah, I mean, if Samoa Joe's claim is that he's on the road, so he's not a good father, A, it makes himself not a good father, but B, he's going to be at a wrestling event, so, I mean, it's kind of hard to prove wrong in a lot of ways.
Right. I mean, they told the story that they want to tell here, and you know, but in the end, it is still Samoa Joe and AJ Styles on the big stage after the dozens and dozens of matches they've had against each other for the last 15 years. They get to have one in what's considered the semi main event of SummerSlam, and you know what? They get their time and they, you know, have a good finish. It definitely could be the best match on the show.
Yeah, I would not be surprised if it is. This is definitely one where I would not worry about outside interference in it.
Unless AJ Styles' wife is going to turn against him and go with Samoa Joe.
Yeah.
But no, you're right. No, there's not going to be any outside interference. It's a straight one-on-one match. I think that, you know, what they've been doing will make it a little more personal. You know, if there's a knock against some of AJ Styles' title defenses, particularly the one last month against Rusev, but that one had like no story going into it, which I guess we should appreciate that they're trying to give this one a story, is that it was technically a really good match, but there was nothing really that made you emotionally invested in it. So they are trying to do something here. And if AJ Styles does more than just an exhibition of moves, you know, he really brings some intensity to this match, I think that can only help.
Yeah. I guess that's always one of those things where I don't blame the wrestler if they were put in a bad spot. Like, just, you know, they still... This week, I guess, and I don't know if I'm pivoting to this or just also using it as an example, like, this week was the first week that I really felt like the WWE wanted Rusev to be the babyface in his feud with Andrade Cien Almas.
And I agree that it's just like Rusev and Lana are being presented as the babyfaces here, and, you know, it's fine. Once again, Has the moment passed for Rusev Day as a babyface act to just to be something truly transformative? Maybe, but I still think that Rusev's probably gone as far as he's going to go as a heel. So that's I mean, let's run with it now and see where it goes. I mean, it's a mixed tag on the kickoff. I don't expect a lot from it. Obviously, we're going to run the Aiden English angle through, and I'm sure he's going to screw up something.
Yeah, and I guess that's one of those things where I guess, you know, if Rusev, to me, would have had a little more of a clear direction going into that AJ Styles feud, it would have helped AJ Styles and just, you know, the match in general. And, yeah, it's like the WWE has really been lost as to what to do with Rusev. And weird that I don't that they haven't gotten behind him. Like it's just one of those damnedest things. Like just when it seemed like they were getting behind him, he loses that match and
he's on the pre-show.
And he's on the pre-show
in a match he's probably gonna lose.
Yeah, it's just like, ooh man, this is. You know, it's really hard to look at something like that like a positive.
Yeah, no. They've done some okay stuff. It's been fine. Entertaining TV filler. I mean, the matches between Zelina Vega and Lana have been certainly nothing to write home about in this women's evolution era. Right. They were something of a. Actually, those matches are probably something of a throwback and a. In a not so good way. But, I mean, some of the stuff they've done has been entertaining. Zelina Vega's a great promo.
Right.
And says, Andrade's a good promo. Russo's a good promo. Lana's a good promo. So, they've been able to get some good digs on each other. Aiden English is fine in his role. I mean, for a pre-show match, it's a pre-show match that's gotten a lot of TV time. I'll say that.
It is probably the matchup that's had the most TV time that's going to be on the pre-show.
Yeah.
That's for sure. And I'm trying to think of what else, if there's another big match on this.
Well, no, I can't believe you're forgetting about this. It's pretty much the highlight of SmackDown. Oh. The saga of Daniel Bryan and The Miz.
Oh, yeah, that is very wrong of me.
And that three-part series was really, 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 really well done. They had, they told the whole story going back to the first season of NXT and, carried it through. Some great clips, obviously great video work, great promo work from Miz and Bryan. I said, not a lot we can say about it, but it really does feel like one of the more hotly anticipated matches on the show. I'm glad that they did not kind of let that match kind of go by the wayside. One of their title matches on the SmackDown side of things. But
this is another one where I think I started off the show talking about it, like where you've almost got to have someone win. Like if Daniel Bryan loses this one. I don't get what's going on.
Well, I mean, it's something for if they want to keep drag it out, have Miz something to lord over him until the rematch. They could do that. Although I do think that maybe it will be the after 2 years or 8 years, however way you want to look at it, for Bryan to get his big win over Miz. It would certainly be a cathartic moment.
Yeah.
Huge. I think the match is going to be very, very well received. I think that everything they do is going to be, it's going to have a lot of heat. Great crowd reactions, clear babyface, clear heel. It's everything you want in a match. It's just is this a one and done situation where Bryan just gets the clean win? Or do they want to drag it out and have Miz actually score the upset?
Yeah, and I guess that's the thing to me. Like, if you just, if you frame this match a little bit more with the recency bias, you can kind of build up to that 8-year grudge match thing if you extend this. But since you've already brought that 8-year grudge match thing into play, I guess that's the reason I lean more towards saying that Brian almost has to pull off this win. Because, you know, there's always those little truths in any heels talk. And definitely the fact that Daniel Bryan hasn't done anything since coming back is... it's pretty true. Like, I mean, I know that it hasn't been that long, but they really haven't featured him at all.
No, not really. I mean, his story was featured pretty prominently going into WrestleMania. Then afterward, he got stuck with Big Cass. And, you know, the Team Hell No reunion was fun while it lasted, but petered out for reasons that were beyond their control. And now, you know, this is what people wanted. This match with the Miz. Okay, and you know they were able to essentially put up these distractions in Daniel Bryan's way, so that they could keep them away from each other until SummerSlam. I mean, I think you could argue that Bryan's comeback kind of suffered because of it. Not going with this match right away and then moving Bryan on to bigger and better things, but. It feels like a big match on a big show. They've done a great job with all of this. What's above it? I mean, I guess if Nakamura retains, you can go with Bryan and Nakamura next, possibly, if you want to have Bryan go up for the United States title. This is the one and done situation. I don't know if they're gonna. I don't know if I'd say that Bryan and should go for the WWE Championship yet, because I do see Joe and Styles being a multiple pay-per-view feud.
Right. Yeah. And
whether
I could,
Joe wins the title on Sunday or not,
I could definitely see Brian being one of those guys too, of kind of saying, "Hey, I got to build this from the ground up," and winning that lower tier championship before moving on to winning, just saying, "Hey, the Miz loved this title." Although the Miz's title isn't on there, is it anymore? It's still on Raw.
I mean, he's a former U.S. champion, but the Intercontinental title is the Miz's baby.
Okay. Yeah, so I mean, they can't really play up that. It'd be pretty cool if they could play up that angle. I mean, it'd really help a mid-card feud run for Daniel Bryan, which really wouldn't be a bad thing to have him work with some of the younger heels and help them in the ring. But, I guess I go back to, I really just see Bryan needing to win this thing. Even if there's certainly a case that could be made for having the Miz be able to lord. But, I mean, I guess that's the thing. Like, even in the video packages, they mentioned that Bryan beat the Miz in their only one-on-one match. And, I mean, really, the rest of the video packages and the rest of the way they talked really made that moment feel quite irrelevant.
Yeah, once again... When you're talking about the NXT era stuff, it makes it sound impressive to say this goes back 8 years. But I mean, they had other matches. It's weird they did not mention that. I believe later that year, once Bryan was on the main roster full time, they did have a Bryan Miz match where Bryan, I believe, won the U.S. title. I think Bryan was the one who won the U.S. title for Miz when he was U.S. champion.
Oh, okay.
So, I mean, they've had other matches against each other. I'm vaguely remembering when Miz was WWE champion. They did Miz and Daniel Bryan as a TV main event, I believe, where Miz won clean. I'm just kind of vaguely remembering that in that whole blur of an era.
I'm not saying you're wrong. It's quite possible that these things happened. I personally do not recall them But yeah, I guess it's kind of interesting if they decided not to play those parts of this feud up.
Yeah, it is weird that they did not bring up the other times that they've actually wrestled each other. It's odd that they left it at that one match. That match I have no memory of. The match where Bryan actually won while he was still, as part of NXT.
Right.
That's a memory that's gone forever, apparently, for me. That was news to me that happened in May of 2010. But no, I mean, they've done a really great job with this. They had, with that promo on Talking Smack 2 years ago, and then Bryan even being able to come back. They've had this essentially this perfect story just fall into their lap. They're doing a good job with it. It's one of the matches I'm most, it's probably the match I'm most looking forward to.
Yeah, it should be a good one.
Yeah, it should be really good. I mean, they've had 2 years to think about this, to want this, to make this right. I think they're going to, and I think it'll be something special.
Okie doke. Well, now I think we've exhausted the SmackDown side of the card, anything important.
The New Day. We don't have to.
No, not really. Like I like the New Day well enough. I loved Luke Harper on the ENC pod of awesomeness. But as far as the match itself goes, I don't see any reason the Bludgeons don't retain. I guess it's kind of a weird thing.
I think they should keep going until Cody finds that. I mean, unless they want to keep running with the New Day and the Usos forever, I think they should try to find a new super team to eventually unseat the Bludgeon Brothers.
Yeah, as much as I love New Day, and I'd be completely cool if they had another title reign at some juncture, but. And not just not feeling it for this particular pay-per-view. And again, I feel like as we've talked, we've been talking about a lot of title changes.
Yeah.
So some of these minor titles are going to need to stay on who they're on. And the Bludgeon Brothers still seem to be far more in the unbeatable category than New Day does. New Day can bounce back, and it's not really a big deal at all. So I mean, I do think we're definitely done now.
We're done now.
Do we want to do any of the G1 final? Because I really only caught the final match. Honest,
I think
with
definitely
you.
Do some. I mean, it's an interesting idea to kind of put the, well, not the oldest guy, but, kind of the John Cena, let's say, of New Japan, Tanahashi, in the position now to main event the Tokyo Dome for the IWGP Championship on January 4th. The kind of de facto legend going for his last run is a story it's been done before and it can be done well. So I'm definitely not against it. By the end, I was rooting for him because I have watched a lot of it and I really, really enjoyed his matches throughout the tournament. I think a lot of guys did a lot of really tense, as I say, strong style matches that, in my opinion, got a little too brutal. Whereas I think Tanahashi was definitely wrestling very, really, really entertaining, excellent matches, mm-hmm. but very smart matches, safer matches than other people were wrestling. Well, so I was really, as I said, by the end, I was rooting for Tanahashi. I thought his match with Ibushi was among the best matches of the tournament I had seen. I thought Tanahashi was actually kind of better better the match than Ibushi was. I wasn't a fan of Ibushi not selling the work on the knee. If you're going to introduce that in the match, a guy should not be doing springboards effortlessly afterward, in my opinion.
I maybe could have watched that with a little more of a critical eye, at least as far as that example goes. And maybe just because I make fun of some of the wrestlers about no one selling these days. But there are times where I guess I sometimes overlook the no selling of things like that, just because it is somewhat commonplace to be able to shake off injuries a little bit easier than in some times past, just so that... I'm usually in this camp, you end up with a more entertaining match, or at least a more athletic match, than you may have gotten in the past.
Right. No. Everything Ibushi did was essentially flawless. At that point, maybe you shouldn't even be introducing an injury storyline at all. And you know, it doesn't really need to be there. That thinking aside, it was an excellent match. That capped off an excellent tournament. Once again, there's a lot of potential ways this can go, because the key guys in the G1, particularly the guy who won, and then the champion in it always also end up defending their titles, because here's something that's you receive your contract for the January 4th. Tell me if you've heard this one before.
Oh, okay.
In the form of a briefcase.
Oh.
And you are expected to defend that briefcase at least a couple of times before January 4th. So it's no guarantee that Tanahashi is going to be in the man of the tilt, you know.
I mean, I know that we didn't touch on the... I don't feel like we talked about the Braun Strowman-Kevin Owens match very much, honestly. But the briefcase isn't always on the line for some title holders. So a mandatory defense thereof is something that really doesn't happen in the WWE, a mandatory. Like, usually someone, you know, like Braun Strowman has kind of worked themselves into a corner to deserve, quote-unquote, having their briefcase put up, and not kind of... That sounds almost more like you're earning to keep it.
Yeah, it's like, it becomes like a championship that needs to be defended.
Right.
And they are going to do... It looks like they are going to do Tanahashi versus Okada, because Tanahashi and Okada end up going to a 30-minute draw in their match, and they're playing up that it's been over 3 years since the last time Tanahashi was able to beat Okada. So to do one more big Tanahashi Okada match before the Dome, where conceivably Okada could take the title shot for himself, that certainly adds some intrigue there.
That does sound pretty interesting. At least, it's kind of fun that I can at least know somewhat what's going on, even if I don't watch the product consistently as some others. I guess all the people that we've mentioned for New Japan, I enjoy their wrestling, and it makes it really easy to tune in, even if I don't see some of the character development going on in between. Although that is the one thing about possibly and probably changing TV providers. Access TV will be on DirecTV. So I will have...
that'll be good for you. No, that'll be good.
A chance to watch that product.
I think they are getting pretty well caught up on... Well, San Francisco Live, obviously, and then I think they do. They break down the G1. This is what they've done in past years with the Axis Shane. They break down the G1 into kind of like the top matches to.
Oh, kind of a best
like
of
about, you know, 4 or 6 weeks or whatever.
Uh huh.
And then they'll move forward with the rest of the shows through the fall.
Oh, gotcha. Yeah, so I definitely could look forward to maybe a little more New Japan consistency in my life moving forward here. But for the time being, still enjoying what I'm seeing. There's a lot of good wrestling out there, as the kids like to say.
Yeah, there definitely is. I mean, it's an interesting world we're living in where so much of this is so readily available. I mean, everything's, you know, from, you know, a fancy, you know, multi-camera HD shoot to some guy with a cell phone at an indie show. You can pretty much see everything that's out there.
Yep. If you like one certain style, you can certainly find it being practiced at some location. It might not be near you, but you probably have access to it. So go out and find it. And hey, that's why you tune into Stunt Granny to hear us talk about all this other crazy shit in the world of wrestling. So at Frango11, at Chris Calamita, the brand is at Stunt Granny. Rate and review us on iTunes, SoundCloud, or wherever you listen to us. And have a good night.